Good morning. It is time to get up with high-profile players feeling down. Max is mad. He's not going to take it anymore. We'll tell you why he's ready to blow up the baseball season. Then, one NBA player doesn't feel quite so good about coming back, and he'll tell you why. What the heck is going on here? We'll get to the bottom of all of it. And then, the man on the hottest seat in the NFL explains how he's going to handle everything in time to stave off disaster in Big D. All that and more as we get up with you, starting right now on a Thursday from Bristol. I'm Mike Greenberg, and delighted you've chosen to get up with us. It is a very busy day with huge news from two of our major sports on the verge of return, and we will get to both of those after we get up and go, run you around the rest of the busy sports news from yesterday. Our Jackie McMullen is reporting the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame has postponed the enshrinement ceremonies for the class of 2020. It was going to be late August of this year. It will now be the spring of next year. This class headlined by Kevin Garnett and Tim Duncan and Kobe Bryant. Elsewhere, AAC Commissioner Mike Oresko told our Paul Feinbaum yesterday that his conference is prepared to play college football in the fall, even if some of the members are unable to participate. American schools covered 9 states in football. Elsewhere, Dana White revealed the full card for UFC 250 on SportsCenter yesterday, and two-weight female champion Amanda Nunes will headline the main event, which will take place without fans at the UFC's facility in Las Vegas on June the 6th. And that brings us to this. As I mentioned, two big pieces of news today from the NBA and Major League Baseball. Woj and Jeff Passan are here. Jeff, sit tight a second. I'm coming to you in a moment. But we'll start with the NBA, where they continue to work towards a plan to resume the season from a bubble environment at Disney's Wide World of Sports. Last night, Clippers guard Patrick Beverley was on with SVP and said it will take one thing for him to feel comfortable to play.
Communication. That's it. You know, it's just sad that we got to hear about things happening, you know, in our workplace and stuff like that via Twitter. I mean, it's good. It's entertaining. It's fun. But just want more communication. Let us know. Don't just string us along. Man. If the NBA is starting, if the NBA is finished, just let us know. I challenge the NBA. You know, we bled blood, sweat, and tears for this league, and we feel like it should be a certain line of respect that we should be knowing what's going on. Whatever the answer is, regardless how people take it, we just want to know, can we hoop? That's it.
So, Adrian Wojnarowski, that's Patrick Beverley. He's looking for answers. Are you hearing similar things from other players? What did you think of that?
Every single day, Greeny. Every hour on every day. And listen, it's a tough spot because the reporting on the league's return is ahead, mostly sometimes, of the communication with the players from the league and the Players Association. And listen, I know Patrick Beverley. He'll go play in the parking lot right now. Never mind having to go to Disney. Especially the guys on the contenders, they want to get back. And I know Patrick's blown up his agent, Kevin Bradbury's blown up Lawrence Frank and Mike Winger with the Clippers, and they want answers from their teams. And, you know, you get the frustration from teams at times, I think especially earlier in this process, when players like Patrick Beverley would come to them and say, guys, where are we with this? And the teams didn't have that information from the league office, because I think what Adam Silver has tried to do here was understand we're going to push a decision until the very last possible minute. That's why they're still working through the details now. They want to have every last piece of data they can on the science and the health. They want to know more than whether it's 20 teams or 24 teams or who's in and who's out and what's the structure. I think what keeps Adam Silver up at night is, are we putting our players and our coaches and those who might be more vulnerable with our older employees and staff, Are we putting them at a risk that is elevated beyond what they might be dealing with in their everyday life? And I think that's the threshold they've tried to go at with this. And in doing that, you know, there are going to be times where players and teams themselves, coaches, you know, don't have the answers that they want at that time. But we're getting closer to a resolution here.
Well, look, I mean, I think if there's one thing all of us have figured out through all of this, not just in sports, a pandemic is a time when there are a lot more questions than there are answers. I think that applies to almost everything. So quickly, you mentioned we're running out of time. Give me a sense of that. When do we need to get to the next level of this thing to make sure it keeps moving forward?
There's a call today with the league office and the general managers. Tomorrow, the board of governors, essentially the owners. And I think we'll have a better picture through the weekend and into next week at what the structure of a return is going to look like. And, you know, I think one place the league is really looking at right now, Greeny, 20 teams, the 16 playoff teams, and then four teams in the Western Conference who are on the bubble, Portland, New Orleans, Sacramento, San Antonio. That is a focus right now on the board of what they're looking at, but they haven't decided, and they still got more drilling down to do on this.
All right, yeah, the 20 teams, I'm calling the Jalen Rose plan. He was the first person I heard present it, and it sounds like a good idea to me. Woj, outstanding, thank you. We'll continue to lean on you for this. So there's one basketball player who's looking for answers, but that's nothing compared to what we heard from one of baseball's biggest stars yesterday. In baseball, they're dealing with a very unique set of issues in their desire to return. Max Scherzer, one of the best pitchers in the sport and a member of the Players Association's executive subcommittee, said this on Twitter last night, quote, "After discussing the latest developments with the rest of the players, there's no reason to engage with MLB in any further compensation reductions. We have previously negotiated a pay cut in the version of prorated salaries, and there's no justification to accept a second pay cut based upon the current information the union has received. I'm glad to hear other players voicing the same viewpoint and believe MLB's economic strategy would completely change if all documentation were to become public information." So here we go. Jeff Passan is with us. That elevated quickly. You told us that it would. What impact do you think someone like Scherzer, who has a very loud voice, what impact do those comments have going forward?
You know, if this were a lesser player, Greeny, I don't know if it would be taken quite as seriously, not just by the public, but by Major League Baseball. When you have a voice like Max Scherzer's, a guy who has multiple Cy Young Awards, a guy who's probably going to be in the Hall of Fame, a guy who is widely recognized as being really intelligent, that puts some weight and some heft behind them. And this is where the Players Association in the past has been. You have guys like Tom Glavine. You have guys, you know, dating back in the 60s and 70s and 80s who were among the foremost players in the sport. And when you have someone like that with words that strong, I think it really illustrates how angry the players were at Major League Baseball's proposal on Tuesday.
Now, so I saw that you reported that the players are now going to send back their counteroffer. If Scherzer is right, then they're going to go back and say, we're not taking any further pay cut. So now the two sides seem to be dug in. So what happens next?
Hey, Greeny, I don't even think that we should call this a counteroffer, because from what I was told last night, the Players Association is essentially going to treat that Tuesday offer from Major League Baseball like it never existed. They're just going to go and make an offer themselves about what they want. And that offer is going to include more than 100 games in the season, as opposed to the 82-game season that MLB had proposed. And it's also going to talk about how they will be paid their full prorated share of their salaries. And that is a big sticking point here. Where this goes, you have one side with Major League Baseball here that is entrenched. You have another side with the Players Association here that is entrenched. At some point, if there's going to be baseball this year, Greeny, one of the sides has to bend even just a little bit. And I don't know which side that's going to be at this point.
Okay, I want you to stay with me, Jeff, because yesterday while you and I were talking, I was told Dominic Foxworth really wanted to get in on the conversation because he has a great deal of perspective that he can offer to this. And Neek, for those who don't know, was the president of the NFL Players Association and was the CEO of the NBA Players Association. So you have extraordinary expertise in the area of these sorts of labor negotiations. And as you watch all of this unfold, Neek, what thoughts are going through your mind?
I mean, it's frustrating and disappointing because I understand this time is tough for everybody, and some teams may lose money, but overall, the NBA is going to be fine. Excuse me, the Major League Baseball is going to be fine. They have a legal monopoly, so their business is not going to collapse, and it's not incumbent on the players to make the owners whole. Like, I feel like the owners have not compensated the players for their growth and how much the team values have grown. It just, to me, is frustrating. It feels like an opportunistic attempt at the owners to take more from the players when it's not their responsibility. If you can't afford to withstand these tough times, then maybe you can't afford to own a Major League Baseball franchise. There's only 30 of them. I'm sure there are 30 people in this country who can afford to withstand this, knowing that going forward, that their businesses are going to be fine. They have a monopoly on professional baseball in this country. They will be okay. Their franchise values will go up when we rebound from this. And to me, it feels unfair to ask these players, whose careers on average are only 5 years, to somehow make them whole, even though they're going to own their teams into perpetuity when their franchise values continue to rise and when everyone's allowed back in stadiums. However many years it takes, they're going to be fine. It seems unfair to have these small group of players bear more burden than the prorated salaries, which I'm not even sure that they should have done that, because they signed a contract, and I think the players deserve what they have sacrificed and committed their lives to achieve this short window to make money. And it feels to me unfair that Major League Baseball is trying to come take another shot at taking money away from those players. They should accept that they took a chance and it didn't work, and back off and let's play baseball.
Nick, how about the public strategy? That was the other piece of this that I saw in a note from you, that the way this is being positioned publicly is something that seems very familiar to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's familiar to all of us who watch sports. Is it most of us don't know who the owners are. Most fans don't recognize owners or don't think of them by name. So when there's a fight between millionaires and billionaires, a union argument, the fans normally turn against the players. And the players feel that pressure and they care. I know that from being president of the NFL Players Association. They feel bad. But the owners, no one talks about or points them out by name and calls them greedy in these situations, because we don't know who they are. We only know the commissioner. So to me, it's frustrating and it's unfair that they try to do this. So I'm happy that Max Scherzer is willing to stand up. And I'm certainly willing to stand up, too, even though I'm not a part of their union, to point out the hypocrisy of the owners in this situation.
So, Jeff, let me give you the final word here. What should we as baseball fans be expecting today and the rest of this week? They got to get this thing done, you told me, by the end of May. What should we expect to happen?
Yeah, I would love to believe that this is going to get done by the end of May, Greeny. It ain't. And really? What happens is the clock starts ticking even louder now. I think if they want to get back to play a 100-game season, you have to do it as soon as humanly possible if you want a 3-week spring training 2.0 before that. If it's an 82-game season, you may be able to, take a couple of days. But ultimately, the sides do need to find some sort of detente, and I just don't know where that is. And without that, we're not going to see baseball this year.
Wow, this is not where we wanted to start the show today, but this is where you have to. This is where the news is right now. We are in the middle of this. Guys, I have to leave it there, but we'll come back. Nick, we'll talk about this more a little bit later. I got to get to a break here, because we've got a bunch of other stuff to get to in the program today, including this guy. The new head coach of the Cowboys says his star quarterback will be ready to go. But is McCarthy himself the one on the hottest seat in the NFL? We'll talk about it next. And then, with a potential return to play, our insider details what the new version of the playoffs should look like and why 16 teams is not enough. That's on the way. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers always there for you rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Get Up is brought to you by Taco Bell. Order ahead and pick up your favorites at our contactless drive-thru. And by Disney Plus, all of your favorites all in one place. Sign up today. All right, let's run the hurry up through a bunch of NFL stories. Diana Russini is with us this morning. Diana, the NFL has tabled its vote on adding a sky judge. What are they considering with the owners' meeting today?
Yeah, a lot of bad reaction to that because that was the most popular proposal that was on the table. But I did get a copy. This is a memo that was sent out to the coaches and GMs yesterday. And basically, the league is going to continue to tweak this fourth and fifth onside kick alternative. It can be used twice in regulation, not in overtime, and it's going to be an untimed down. So today, the owners will vote, and it's getting a lot of support around the league.
Next note here, Antonio Brown posted a video working out with Dwayne Haskins. Is this a big deal?
It's not. He worked out with Dwayne Haskins last summer. And if you follow a lot of people on Instagram, which I know you do, he works out with a lot of people. Stephon Diggs, Ocho Cinco, and obviously we just saw him recently with Dwayne Haskins. As for the interest level of Antonio Brown right now in the league, I'm told there's none right now.
Okay. We'll get back to that. Adam Schefter reporting Jadeveon Clowney declined an offer from the Browns. What do we have?
Yeah, you got to look at it this way. He was looking to get paid, right, during this free agency period. He started off wanting $20 million, dropped his price to $17. The Browns are giving the best offer, but as of right now, Clowney isn't taking that. So we've got four teams, Greeny, that have now offered him. We've got Philly, we've got the Tennessee Titans, the Seattle Seahawks, and the Cleveland Browns. But for now, Clowney is just going to sit back and wait.
And how about his former team, the Texans? They'll have a new look next year. What can you tell us about their offense?
Yeah, a lot of changes in Houston. Bill O'Brien will no longer be the play caller here. Tim Kelly is taking over this offense, an offense that used DeAndre Hopkins a lot, to put it lightly. So now what are they going to do? It's going to be a group of receivers. And honestly, this is really going to come down to a lot of Deshaun Watson magic because they still don't have that top receiver on this roster. But I'm told from players on this team, that they really believe in Tim Kelly calling the plays now.
It's going to be interesting to watch. They have put so much on Watson from the moment that he got there. It is remarkable. Meanwhile, let's talk about another team here, the Cowboys. And the continuing saga with their quarterback, Dak Prescott, as we continue to work our way towards July 15th, which is the deadline for the two sides to work out an extension. He's currently got the franchise tag sitting there. Speaking with the media yesterday, the new coach, Mike McCarthy, says he's confident that they'll work out a deal.
He's involved in a business situation, and I have full confidence that he'll be ready to go. And, you know, there has been communication. This is the way these business situations go sometimes, and you respect that and have all the confidence it'll work out.
All right, just remarkable as he's talking about communication that you can barely understand a word the man is saying, but it sort of gives you an indication of what it's like right now in the NFL. Mike Tannenbaum joins the party this morning as well. And Mike T, I want to start with you because we were saying before the show, Mike McCarthy is going to paint a positive picture here publicly, but what do you imagine is actually going on behind closed doors?
Greedy, there's two different audiences here. Publicly, the ship is steady. I'm an experienced head coach. We got this. Andy Dalton is here. Inside the building, every 10 minutes, Stephen Jones, Todd Williams, their contract negotiator, he's talking to them. Hey, if we heard from Todd France, Dak Prescott's agent, has he texted us? Has he emailed us? Is there a new offer? Where are we? There's a big sense of urgency when you're a new head coach and you're inheriting an offense that was number one overall, Greeny. So outside, calm, inside, there is a big sense of urgency to get this contract done.
It's interesting because to me, Dominique, it feels like the Dak Prescott situation has taken all of the attention away from the pressure that I think exists on the coach. Let's make no mistake about it. Mike McCarthy was hired for one reason and one reason only, because there was a belief that the coach was the one thing holding this team back from being a Super Bowl contender. That's not me saying it. I think it's the owner who clearly believes that. So I don't think there was a coach facing more pressure in the whole sport, assuming we get this year started, than Mike McCarthy.
You might be right about that, and I do think that one of the benefits of bringing in a new coach is you get more time with your team in the offseason. Even though they are going to keep the same offense, it's still nice to have that time because they're bringing in a new defense. Have that time together to improve on your team. But with the unique situation that we're in now, they're not getting that time. So they're missing out on one of the benefits that you could have in this situation. So there's a ton of pressure on Mike McCarthy because you're right. It was believed that this was a Super Bowl contending team last year, and they showed us who they thought the problem was by getting rid of Jason Garrett after last season. So bringing in Mike McCarthy suggests that they believe he's the coach that can take them over the top. And if he doesn't this year, there are going to be some people who are looking around to see whether there's another move to make at that position.
Diana, what are we hearing out of Dallas?
Well, we just looked at the FPI the other day here, and look how high up Dallas rose compared to last year just because the change at head coach in Greeny. We see this every single season. Talent does not win. Discipline and execution does. Mike McCarthy, notoriously known for that. But really the question is going to be, can he bring all this talent together? Because it's undeniable. This roster is stacked. But as they're sitting and waiting to figure out what Dak is going to do, they're going through these virtual meetings as a team. Dak is not there. Andy Dalton is the one there. And when I was talking around the league to different GMs and head coaches, when Andy Dalton was on the street looking for a new home after Cincinnati, I was told that he turned down other opportunities because Dallas told him that he had a shot to win the job if Dak didn't show up.
Wow. Dominic Foxworth may have just fallen out of his chair. You all right, Nick? We need to check on you. You okay?
I was blown away, but then I kind of replayed what she said in his head. He has a shot to win the job if Dak doesn't show up. Of course. And it better be his job if Dak doesn't show up.
If Dak
does show up, Andy Dalton is going to be holding a clipboard, which is what he should be doing. And Andy went to Dallas not to win a job. I think he went to Texas because he's a Texas guy.
Yeah. Quickly, Mike Tannenbaum, does this thing get worked out? I mean, the deadline, July 15th, that 10 minutes before that thing is done, is that when you think we'll get a deal?
Absolutely. Shame on Jerry Jones if it doesn't. Last year, they rewarded Zeke Elliott when they didn't have to. This guy is 26 years old. He's won 40 games. It's really hard to find high-character, productive quarterbacks. Get him signed. July 15th is the deadline. If it doesn't get done, he could become Kirk Cousins and become an unfettered free agent in another year and a half.
Yeah, and you've been saying it for a year on this show, that they did this all in the wrong order. They should have taken care of the quarterback first. They saved him for last, and he's going to wind up breaking the bank as a result. All right, we're rolling on here on Get Up as we continue. After speaking out about the NBA's potential plan to return, Damian Lillard once again addressed the risk-reward factors for teams out of the playoff mix. Yesterday on J&J, you'll hear what he said coming up in just a moment. And we will do this as Zach Lowe joins us. Sneaky Hembo has a question for Zach. Which is the last NBA team to win a playoff series as the eighth seed? That's the question. The answer is next. Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
All right, we are back with Sneaky Hembo time, but when Zach Lowe is up at the plate, nothing is so sneaky. Zach, which is the last NBA team to win a playoff series as an eighth seed?
You just sprung this on me like a minute ago, and the first thing I came to my head was 2012 Sixers when Derrick Rose got hurt. Is that it?
That's exactly right. And in fact, I want everyone to understand, I actually overheard this because Zach Lowe literally just got his microphone turned on 1 minute ago. They threw the question at him, and without even thinking, he just blurted out 2012 Sixers. It was remarkable. So when it comes to Zach Lowe, Hembo's going to have to step up the questions. Meanwhile, there's a bunch to talk about today, Zach, so sit tight a second. All-star Damian Lillard, as you probably know by now, told Yahoo Sports on Tuesday that he would not return to play unless the schedule gave his Trailblazers a legitimate chance at competing for the playoffs. Yesterday, Dame Lillard was on Jalen and Jacoby to clarify what he meant.
I was just saying, you know, we've been off for 2 months, and if we come back, we want to play for something. You know what I mean? So after this type of break, usually when you come back, you know, especially with how fast we're going to be jumping into playing, you know, I think guys are at risk for injury, also at risk of, you know, being exposed to whatever because, you know, none of us have been around each other. If so many teams are going to be in one spot. So, I mean, if we're going to do it, obviously as players, we want to play, but we want to play for something, especially if we were in position to play for that in the first place. So I feel like a play-in tournament would be perfect.
And here is Zach Lowe ready to go this morning. And, you know, Zach, he softened to some degree, at least the way the initial comments sounded yesterday on J&J. But what do you think of that idea? Because I can see that there are a lot of fans out there who are saying, you know what, there's never nothing to play for, right? I mean, people talk about the love of the game and all the rest of that. If the players have the opportunity to come back and play safely, I think there are a lot of fans that would like to see them just come back and play. What did you think of that whole thing?
I mean, I sympathize with Dame on two levels. Number one, they were going to have a shot at it. Memphis has a 3 or 4 game cushion over the rest of those teams, but they had the hardest schedule in the league left, and Portland and a couple other teams had easy schedules. And number two, you know, this is not just like an all-star break. They've essentially had a full offseason, and to come off that to go to quarantine, training camp, full-on ramp up, and play a few regular season games, and you know, you lose the first two and you're really out of the playoff race, I can see why he wouldn't think that was worth it, let alone teams who have no shot to make the playoffs, unless you bring everybody back and say everyone has some shot to make the playoffs, and that just opens up a whole bunch of cans of worms that I'm not super interested in seeing.
Fair enough. So, rather than open up any cans of worms, you can go to ESPN.com because Zach Lowe has a piece up in which you outline some of the possible ways for the NBA to return. Take us through some of the better ideas.
Well, I like the play-in concept. You can do the play-in concept just for the number 8 spot in the West, as angry as that will make the Memphis Grizzlies. And you can structure it so that every team gets 4 or 5 games in. The question is that enough? Is that enough? 4 or 5 games in and you go home to justify all the workload that I just mentioned. You can get even crazier, which I did, and include Brooklyn and Orlando in play-in tournaments, and then your head kind of explodes. The question of all that is going to be, again, is that enough games both to justify the hardship for the players and to kind of help the league recoup whatever revenue it wants? And that's where the World Cup style pool play thing that you guys have already talked about some comes in. Bring 20 or 24 teams back, put them in groups, have them play each other 2, maybe 3 times. Top 2 advance into the conference semifinals, the second round. That way you're adding 25, 30, whatever it is, you're adding a bunch of games. And then you get the opposite issue is, are some teams staying too long? If you lose the first 2 games in your group, you're then hanging around this bubble. Everyone's worried about this virus. Are you hanging around too long? So there's no perfect solution to any of this.
What do you think is the likeliest, at least from the people you talk to, the likeliest way they will go about this?
Boy, I wish anybody had any idea, and that includes people in the league office. I don't know what the likely. I still feel like a play-in tournament is the most logical sort of endpoint, but there is real concern at all levels, including in the league office, that just isn't enough games. And if that's just a disqualifier for a play-in tournament in the end, and I'm not sure that it is, and I'm not saying that it is, I don't really know where you pivot from there. At first, there was a lot of support for just 1-16, just start the playoffs right away and no other horsing around. And I don't know if that support has waned or not, but all these other proposals are out there now.
So now what happens if you bring these teams back? You just mentioned we've basically had an entire offseason. You're going to have some sort of truncated training camp, and then they're going to play, and they're going to decide an NBA champion. Who benefits from this? Like, what do you – I'm not talking about necessarily a specific team, but what sorts of teams, what sorts of players, what sorts of circumstances benefit from this?
I mean, I think the boring answer is it's going to be completely random, right? There are probably going to be a couple of hamstring injuries here or there. Whoever suffers those is not going to benefit. Certainly, teams have gotten the ability to get healthy. Ben Simmons is presumably healthy. Giannis Antetokounmpo, who had a knee injury, remember, that was going to kind of open up the MVP race for LeBron. He's presumably healthy. To me, you always fall back to who has veterans. Who are the teams that have enough guys who have been through the wars before who can say, this is a weird situation, it's unprecedented, it's strange, the circumstances of the quarantine are strange and stressful. I can lock in and I can focus because I've been in stressful, unfamiliar situations before and had to compete and win. So you kind of default to those veteran teams.
Which means the Lakers, the Clippers, the usual suspects. Let me throw a different idea. Go ahead, Zach.
No, usual suspects, even Toronto, the defending champion, they've been through it too. I mean, you lean on those teams, and that's not to discount the Bucks, who have been the best team in the league the whole year.
Let me throw a different idea at you. My thinking on this, they asked me on First Take the other day to pick a team that I think would be the favorite to win the championship. And here's the way I look at it. If they do indeed try and jam an entire NBA postseason into a shorter window than usual, you're talking about playing every other day. I understand there won't be travel. I think the depth becomes a factor, and I think that in some degree, having your stars be younger players becomes an advantage. I can give you a team that has 3 youngish stars who all average 20 points a game and has 10 different players who all average double-digit minutes a game, and that's the Boston Celtics, who are led by a guy who, when last seen, was on the verge of emerging, I think, as a legitimate MVP candidate and play in the weaker conference where the best team, the Milwaukee Bucks, I thought were to put it kindly, underwhelming in the playoffs last year when the going got really tough. So if I'm looking for sort of a dark horse away from the obvious suspects of the Clippers and the Lakers, I think Boston is a very interesting team to watch when they come back in Orlando.
Well, let's talk about Boston. Number one, Kemba Walker was dealing with knee issues when the season was suspended. Do we presume he's healthy? If so, big boost. Number two, they have a huge stake in what happens in...
They have a huge stake in what happens somewhere, and I suppose we'll have to wait some period of time to find out where. You understand the circumstances we're working in under. Again, I'll repeat, up on ESPN.com right now, Zach's entire piece about the different scenarios that are possible for an NBA return, and we'll see if we can bring him back a little bit later. Jay Will going to join us. Jalen Rose is going to join us. But coming up next, coming off a disappointing second season, Baker Mayfield tells us in his own words why this year he's changing his approach. That's next. Get up on ESPN.
GEICO has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
We are back on Get Up, and we're going to Cleveland, where expectations were high last year. But after a disappointing 6-10 season, Freddie Kitchens was let go as coach and replaced by Kevin Stefanski in January. Odell Beckham, of course, is a huge part of this circumstance. He was supposed to give the offense a big play threat, only scored 4 touchdowns last year and averaged a career low 65 yards receiving per game. And it all added up to a down season for the quarterback. Baker Mayfield's numbers fell across the board through 21 picks last year, second most in the league. But the third-year quarterback now thinks that 2020 will tell a different story.
I have a different approach to this year. I think it's everybody that has been interviewed in our team has kind of, you know, hit the nail on the head over and over about, you know, it's just time to work. It's time to do our thing instead of talking about it. This is the first media thing I've done just because there's no need to be talking about it. It's just time to go do it. There's no doubt year three is always a big year in these contracts and timing wise. Everybody knows that, but I'm not going to put any added pressure on myself because if I win, good things will happen. Good things will happen for our team and the guys around me. And that's the most important part. So if I play better, our team's going to do better. So I put that pressure on myself.
A lot of interesting stuff there as Damian Woody joins us here this morning. And we'll get you in a second there, big fella. But I want to start, Diana, with you. What are we hearing coming out of Cleveland about the way this is starting to come together now under these circumstances with the new coach and the quarterback who has everything at stake?
Greeny, did you just hear that from Baker Mayfield? That is growth. That is maturity. That's a third-year quarterback who's had 4 head coaches knowing that the pressure is on him, but he's not going to do what he does all the time, which is talk and talk and talk. Silence is golden for Baker Mayfield. And when I talk to guys in the organization, on the coaching side, the players, it seems that this is what Stefanski is preaching. We're taking the pressure off. We're not going to talk about us going to the playoffs, going to the Super Bowl. What we're going to do is we're going to go out and win. And GM Andrew Berry, who is the youngest GM in the league right now, he did a great job putting together this roster and giving Baker Mayfield protection. They signed Jack Conklin. They drafted an offensive lineman at the top of the draft. Then, oh yeah, they signed Austin Hooper, the tight end, the number one tight end during free agency. So all the pieces are there. And Greeny, when you look at Stefanski's offense, when he was calling the plays in Minnesota, they were just one of 3 teams that relied on the run. And if you really want to take the pressure off a young quarterback, you run the ball. And hey, look at who their running backs are, right? You got Chubb and Kareem Hunt as their 2 backs. So a lot of Minnesota similarities in this offense, which can help Baker Mayfield be successful.
I find that so interesting, the circuit. D, Wood, I'll bring you in on this here, because you can look at it a lot of different ways. You can look at Mayfield and say he really hasn't had a fair chance. As you mentioned, he's on his 4th head coach and he's only played 2 seasons. But there wasn't any question. He just flat didn't play well last year. What do you think is at stake for Baker Mayfield, D. Wood, this season?
Well, listen, I think if Baker Mayfield doesn't play well this year, I think he'll be in the same boat as Mitchell Trubisky as far as the team exercising his 5th-year option. Listen, we all get it. The Cleveland Browns have been the butt of jokes for years. And the primary reason is because it starts at the top with ownership. Ownership is not very good in Cleveland, and it usually permeates its way throughout the organization. But if you look at what the Cleveland Browns have done for Baker Mayfield, and Diana, you know, just talked about it, they've added all types of pieces just to make sure there's no excuses for Baker Mayfield moving forward this year. He has the line. They address the tackles. He has a tight end. He had two dynamic wide receivers. He had two dynamic backs. Those are all the pieces that are necessary for Baker Mayfield to go out there and have a fantastic year. And if it doesn't happen this year, we're going to be talking about him just the way we talk about Mitchell Trubisky this offseason.
That's where he will be in terms of the progression of his contract. And you heard him say that. He knows the third year is a big year for these first-round picks. But what does necessarily success look like? Dominique, do they have to make the playoffs for this to be a success for the Browns?
I don't think they have to, because I think everyone acknowledges how tough that division is. I think they need to be consistent and show improvement, and Baker specifically needs to show improvement. I think that will give a lot of hope to the ownership and the management there in Cleveland. But am I the only one who's disappointed in the new Baker? I want my old Bake back, the one that talked trash. I hope he has a good year this season so that we can see Baker gesturing to sidelines and talking that talk and letting his true self show, because I don't like this new humble Pollyanna Baker. Get me that raw Baker, that college Baker. That's my guy.
Why do you say no, Diana?
Oh, it'll come out.
You want?
It'll come out.
Yeah, well, what does he want? What does he want? Yeah, D's right. It will come out. It will come out, because that's who Baker Mayfield is. No matter how many people are in his ear right now saying, you got to rein it in. Less commercials, less marketing, interviews, less GQ magazines with you and a lion and a tiger or whatever he was doing when he was like the Lion King in some magazine a few years ago, which is still probably one of the most classic photos that we've seen out there in sports. I think a hushed, quiet Baker Mayfield only helps him, but it helps the rest of the team.
He already
has wild people. He's got Jarvis. Let them do the talking.
No. We don't need less of anything except for interceptions. Give me less interceptions, more touchdowns, more talking, more dancing, more gesturing, more wins. That's what I want from Baker. I don't want a quiet Baker. I don't want Baker talking that talk. Be yourself, baby.
Hey, listen.
Go ahead, D-Wade.
Listen, I want more content on the show. So the more Baker that we've seen in the past, the more content we have to talk about on this show.
Here's what I'll say. Win games, then you can say and do whatever you want. But when your team is losing and you're playing lousy, the best opportunity is usually just to shut up. Meanwhile, let's talk about something else. The FPI released its projections on Tuesday and gives the Tampa Bay Buccaneers a 63% chance to make the playoffs and a 30% chance to win the division. Pretty good odds, all things considered. The quarterback's coach, Clyde Christensen, meanwhile, had this to say about Tom Brady coming into the offense. And we thought this was really interesting. He said, I think what we'll see here is Bruce's offense, meaning the coach, Bruce Arians, with a Brady influence. Bruce wants to keep the offense the same. We did some good things last year. Tom has been terrific as far as saying, just tell me what you want to do. We're looking forward to seeing how he can influence the offense. He'll make it better. That's what the great ones do. He'll have some great ideas, so we're anxious to get his take on things. So, Diana, let's get to the bottom of this. Because the offense that they ran last year, and obviously we know that the numbers on the interceptions they threw were huge. Actually, Mike Tannenbaum rejoins us here. Let me start with you, Mike T, because you were making this point in the meeting this morning, that Tom Brady is not a really good fit in the offense Bruce Arians has run in the past. Why is that?
There's a lot to like about Bruce Arians' offense, but his quarterbacks get hit a lot. If you look at the last number of spots he's been at Greeny, his quarterbacks get hit. They get sacked quite a bit. And if you look at the last 2 years, only Drew Brees was sacked or hit less than Tom Brady. So he's turning 43 years old this August. I've been with over 40-year-old quarterbacks, Brett Favre, Vinny Testaverde. They do not like to get hit, Greeny. That is a concern. And they'll have some time to work it out in terms of protections, who's hot, adjustments, things like that. But that is the number one thing they have to solidify, is protection in Bruce Arians' offense.
So what should we, Diana, what should we expect that offense to look like when they get on the field?
Mike, I don't want to be dramatic here, but this seems insane to me. You're telling me you're going to take Tom Brady, who's been in the same offense for 20 years, and you're going to try to teach a new quarterback or a 40-year-old quarterback a new offense? Why teach him anything? Give him every single thing he knows how to do. Do exactly what New England did. Because there's going to be a learning curve here. We have these Zoom meetings, a condensed offseason. Give him every reason to be successful, which is just keep it as it is. Tom Brady's arm strength is not what it is. When I talk to defensive coordinators who faced Tom Brady last year, they all say the same thing. He's skittish in the pocket. He doesn't have that patience. And if he doesn't have that protection, you know who's going to be out on the field? It's not going to be Tom Brady. It's going to be the backup, Blaine Gabbert. Remember him? So unless they figure out a way to make sure they protect him and do what Josh McDaniels did with Tom Brady, I think it's going to be hard for this team to be successful.
You played with him at the beginning of his career, D. Wood. What do you think that offense needs to look like for him to be successful? He's clearly been working a lot with his teammates because he obviously has not been working on his golf game. So if he's out there, assuming we see him on these high school fields and all the rest of that, what do we expect the offense to look like, D. Wood?
So, Greeny, I think you'll appreciate this, and Mike T was a part of this. In 2008, we traded for Brett Favre in training camp. And so when we brought in Brett Favre, we didn't ask Brett Favre to learn our offense. Brett Favre literally taught everyone to learn the West Coast offense. In the first couple of games, there was an adjustment period. But after we got past the first couple of games, Greeny, we were rolling. I mean, rolling to the point where we were 8-3, where we were coming off back-to-back weeks where we beat New England in New England, and then we went on the road in Nashville and beat a Tennessee Titans team that was 10-0 at the time. So I think it's going to be something similar to that, where Tom Brady is going to bring his offense from New England that he's been in 20 years, and he's going to ask the other people around him to learn that offense to better assimilate and get this thing going.
I think that's a really good analogy to make. And, you know, Mike T, very quickly, I think that Brett Favre's year with the Jets is largely misremembered. People think that it didn't go well because he got hurt at the end and you guys wound up missing the playoffs. The truth is, Mike T, he played very well when he was healthy and that team was looking really good.
Yeah, that's right, Gree. And our thesis was we had a good team, and if we could just get better at quarterback, we like Chad Pennington, but to beat Tom Brady and the Patriots, we needed a better quarterback. Brett came in, played very well, got hurt, and went on to the championship games in subsequent years with Mark Sanchez. But, yeah, those were good teams. And just to go back to Brady for a second, this is a weird offseason for everybody, and we keep talking about Breeze and Peyton against Bruce and Tom on opening day. It's not a fair fight. It's going to take some time. I agree with D. Wood. It's going to take some time for this Tampa Bay offense to get rolling.
Yeah, especially coming off of this truncated offseason. Guys, stay with me. I have a lot more football to get to on the program today, but I want to make sure you know what's coming up here Friday night at 7 Eastern on ESPN. It's an all-new E60. It's called Imperfect, on the baseball career and the troubled life beyond the game of the Hall of Fame right-handed pitcher Roy Halladay, who died piloting his own plane at the age of 40 in 2017. In the 10 seasons from 2002 to 2011, Halladay was the most dominant starting pitcher in the sport. But after he was injured 2 months into the 2012 season, everything started to change. Here's John Barr.
After trying multiple methods of physical therapy, Halladay began taking prescription opioids to manage his back pain in the spring of 2012. According to his wife, he obtained the pills not from a team doctor, but by paying cash to a doctor in Florida that was recommended to him by a Phillies teammate.
He was continuing to hurt himself, and the more he hurt himself, the more dependent he would be on medication. He was breaking his back. He actually shrunk 3 inches from compression in his spine. That's insane.
You can see the all-new E60 titled Imperfect about Hall of Fame pitcher Roy Halladay tomorrow night, 7 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. Coming up, Max is mad. He's ready to blow up the baseball season. You know what? He's probably right. You'll hear all about it next. Get up on ESPN.